We want to read tonight from the book of Psalms, Psalm number 39. If you would turn over there, please. Psalm 39, verse 1. I said, I will take heed to my ways, that I sin not with my tongue. I will keep my mouth with a bridle, while the wicked is before me. I was dumb with silence, I held my peace, even from good. And my sorrow was stirred. My heart was hot within me. While I was musing, the fire burned. Then spake I with my tongue, Lord, make me to know mine end, and the measure of my days, what it is, that I may know how frail I am. Behold, thou hast made my days as an handbreadth, and mine age is as nothing before thee. Verily, every man that is best state is altogether vanity, Selah. Surely every man walketh in a vain show. Surely they are disquieted in vain. He heapeth up riches, and knoweth not who shall gather them. And now, Lord, what wait I for? My hope is in thee. Deliver me from all my transgressions. Make me not the reproach of the foolish. I was dumb, I opened not my mouth, because thou didst it. Remove thy stroke away from me. I am consumed by the blow of thine hand. When thou with rebukes dost correct man for iniquity, thou makest his beauty to consume away like a moth. Surely every man his vanity, Selah. Hear my prayer, O Lord, and give ear unto my cry. Hold not thy peace at my tears, for I am a stranger with thee, and a sojourner, as all my fathers were. O spare me, that I may recover strength before I go hence and be no more. Amen. We know the Lord will add his own blessing to the reading of his holy word tonight to all our hearts. It is a psalm about the brevity of life. And the vanity of life as well, the emptiness of life without the Lord. I particularly draw your attention to verses 4 and 5 of this psalm. We're not really going to be expounding the verses, but we want you to keep them before you as we consider these things tonight. Verse 4 says, Lord, make me to know mine end, and the measure of my days, what it is, that I may know how frail I am. Behold, thou hast made my days as an handbreadth, and mine age is as nothing before thee. Verily, every man at his best state is altogether vanity. Selah. And with that word, Selah, there's the emphasis to stop and think. It's one of the major pauses in Hebrew language. Some of them were just little marks above the letter. Some of them were an actual word, and that's what the word Selah is commonly taken to refer to. It's a pause. You stop and think. And the Lord is having us to think there about the brevity and the vanity of life. 3,000 men, 20% of the workforce of Harland and Wolff, spent 3 years building the mighty Titanic. And yet how quickly she met her end. On that April night, 1912. We're told that she was travelling at 22.5 knots. When out of the darkness the iceberg appeared, there were 30 seconds between the shout of the warning that she was in the path of an iceberg and the actual collision taking place. In that brief little period of time, 30 seconds, it was a sufficient just to steer or try to steer around the iceberg a little. And as we know, they didn't miss the iceberg. 5 compartments were ripped open by the jagged edge of that inflexible iceberg. It was reckoned that the iceberg stood in the region of 150 feet out of the water. It reached up to D-deck on the Titanic. Some of the survivors later testified that at the inquiry, there was 2 inquiries, one in America and one back here in United Kingdom, but some of them testified at the American inquiry that they saw an iceberg the next day that had the marks of an evident collision, a punt. Now the Titanic, having collided with the iceberg, had only 2 hours and 20 minutes before she would sink to the bottom of the ocean. A ship that had taken 3,000 men 3 years to build goes down into the depths of the ocean in 2 hours, 20 minutes. Descending at 10 miles an hour, it took her 14 minutes to reach the bottom of the ocean floor. And such was the force of her impact that when she was discovered 73 years later in 1985, it was reckoned that her bow had penetrated into the seabed 18 metres. 18 metres into the seabed. Such was the force of her impact upon the seabed. She now lies 2.3 miles below the surface of the ocean in a watery grave. And we want tonight to continue to consider some spiritual lessons from this tragedy. 15th of April was the actual 100th anniversary of it, marked by various events that took place, and not only here but other places as well, in Southampton and also in America, to mark the anniversary, because she has become such an iconic ship to have sunk on her maiden voyage. One other spiritual lesson that we can learn from that tragedy is the number of missed opportunities for her deliverance. There are many records, many suggestions of the neglected warnings, of the missed opportunities, of the preoccupation with trivial things that missed the warning signs. And all of these came together to play a part in her demise. There was repeated warnings about earth, about icebergs that were sent out. In fact, there were six specific warnings that were given to shipping in the vicinity of where the Titanic foundered. The first of those was received and acknowledged by the Titanic over 5 hours prior to the collision with the iceberg. The first warning, 5 hours before she ever collided with the iceberg, the warning was sent out that there were icebergs in the vicinity and ice fields as well, and still they went on. Still there's no record of the boat slowing down. None of the passengers knew any slowing down of the speed of the vessel at all. Even though they'd received warning after warning after warning, they still went on. And those warnings continued right up until the collision. It was known that there was a warning sent at 11 p.m., 45 minutes prior to hitting the iceberg. There was the last of the warnings sent from the California. Her captain sent this message to the Titanic: "We are stopped, surrounded by ice." Warning the Titanic and her captain and officers that were manning the deck at the time, the bridge, that this is what they had to do. They had to stop. "We're surrounded by ice." But Captain Smith and Bruce Ismay both neglected to order the ship to slow down when approaching the ice fields. And as a result, she went on to collide with that iceberg. There was also the fatal delay of 1 hour after she had collided with the iceberg before the launch, the first of the lifeboats. 1 hour delay. I've been reading up this past week a little bit about the story of the lifeboats. Because when they got them finally down onto the surface of the ocean, and some of them rowed away, they transferred them over, and some of them tried to go back to get other people in the water. And if that hour, that hour that they had from the time of the collision until the first lifeboat was launched, if that hour was utilised, it is reckoned that they could have got other people off the boat and saved many more lives. But you see, the warnings weren't heeded. And surely there's an obvious spiritual lesson in that. How many warnings does the sinner receive and they do not heed them? How many times does the unconverted be challenged about their need of Christ? Their need to stop and think, their need to stop and do something about their eternal well-being, the fact that they're surrounded by danger. Danger all around them, death is all around them. How many times is the sinner not warned about those things? Even those tonight of us who are saved, we can look back over our lives and I'm sure we can say the Lord warned us many times. We can remember maybe warnings in the gospel that we received. And time after time when the Lord warned us and spoke to us and maybe we went on, we didn't stop and take heed to the warning. We didn't listen. It seems it's in man's nature not to listen to the warning. There's something in our nature that wants to press on. There's something in our nature that doesn't want to stop. There's something in our nature that just wants to keep going forward. Many a sinner is like that. They just want to keep going on and they're oblivious to what is going on round about them. Preoccupation with trivial things certainly led to the demise and the sinking of the Titanic. The last ice warning was received, as I said, 11 p.m., 45 minutes before the hitting of the iceberg. You know that last warning was never conveyed to the captain of the Titanic. Sorry, I said 45. The last warning was 15 minutes before the collision. That last warning, 15 minutes before the actual collision, was never conveyed to the captain, Captain Smith of the Titanic. He never got it. And the reason why he didn't get it, was the preoccupation with the wireless operator on the Titanic with something very trivial. Because that last warning received a very particularly crude response from the wireless operator on the Titanic. Here's what he said in response to the warning that came in about ice fields and icebergs and the fact that the Californian had stopped. He says, "Shut up." This is what he replied by the wireless telegraph. "Shut up, I am busy. I am working Cape Race." And what that's a reference to was the sending and the receiving of trivial messages on the newfangled wireless telegraph by passengers on the Titanic. The rich passengers on the Titanic were just sending messages, immaterial messages. Messages of no substance and no need to be sent, but it says that the wireless operator was so overloaded with all of these messages to send that when this important message came along, there's ice and they need to stop. He was so preoccupied with these trivial things that that's the response he sent back. "Shut up, I'm busy." Little did they know that their unimportant pleasure seeking was going to prove so costly and so fatal. That warning should have been listened to. And far more than that, it ought to have been passed on. It may well have saved the ship and all that were sailing upon it. But again, the lesson is obvious. How many of the unconverted are just like that? They don't want to hear the warning. And maybe even they respond in very similar terms as that wireless operator responded to that warning. They want the person who's warning them to shut up. They want to hear the message. Don't want to hear the warnings of the gospel. Don't want to hear the warnings of a heaven to gain and a hell to shun. Don't want to hear the warnings that they've a soul that needs to be saved. They're busy. Busy at trivial things. Busy at unimportant things. As this psalm highlights for us, man's life is vanity. He's taken up oftentimes with the most worthless things, the most empty things. The word vanity is the idea of emptiness. And how many times are men and women, unconverted men and women, taken up with the most empty things in life and they become all important to them. And they lose their soul because they're not taken up with more serious things. There was a fatal decision taken just prior to the collision. The Marconi wireless system was then a very recent invention. It wasn't on the bridge of the ship as it is today. It wasn't manned 24 hours as it is today on a ship. But back then it was just a new invention and it was more like a rich man's toy, a pleasure thing, than it was to be seen as anything that was essential to the safety of a ship. And at 10:30 p.m., 15 minutes before the Titanic hit the iceberg. The wireless operator on the Californian, not on the Titanic now, the wireless operator on the Californian put down his wireless headset and went to bed. 15 minutes later, the Titanic hit the iceberg, and then there was panic stations. Then the appeals for help went out from the wireless operator. There was at least the ship that was the closest. There was nobody there to hear it. And the telegraph was being sent out, but the wireless telegraph operator on the Californian wasn't listening to it, for he had turned into bed. The American investigation on this particular point afterwards concluded that it was not chance that sunk the Titanic, but the grossest negligence alone that sealed the fate of so many that night. And that decision to switch off the wireless telegraph and go to bed was reckoned to contribute so much to the death of so many lives. Today, the wireless telegraph has to be operated 24 hours a day. It's on the bridge. It's part of the safety mechanism of a ship. And that stems back to the requirements that the inquiry insisted that would be made, the improvements to safety of ships as a result of the sinking of the Titanic 100 years ago. Because it played such a part in the demise of the Titanic. How many a fatal decision does a sinner take? The choices that they make, the road that they take in life. There's many a person has turned away from hearing the gospel, has closed their ear and their mind and gone off another way. Maybe they've absented themselves at all altogether from where the gospel is preached because they don't want to hear. And many of them have sealed their fate as a result of it. You know, deliverance was so very near for the Titanic. There's great debate about the nearness of the Californian to the Titanic when she hit the iceberg and subsequently to that, and whether she could have come to her aid or not. But what is not disputed is this, that later, it was later stated that the captain of the Californian and his crew watched the lights of the Titanic from the deck of the Californian. She stopped. Remember, she sent the message, "We're stopped, we're in the middle of ice," and she stayed there to 5:15 a.m. in the morning. She was close enough to come to the Titanic. If somebody had been operating the wireless telegraph system, they would have heard the appeals for help that came from the Titanic, but there was nobody operating that. And there's the captain and there's his other officers standing on the deck of the Californian, and they're way in the distance, maybe only 15 miles or so in the distance, they can see the lights of this liner, but they don't realise she's sinking. There was rockets that were sent up from the Titanic after she hit the iceberg to draw attention and to seek deliverance, but the captain and those that were standing on the deck of the Californian, they interpreted them as a party going on. Didn't realise that they were crying for help and looking for deliverance. They thought it was entertainment. They thought that it was because of this great liner, the Titanic, and the whole story that had been developing about her as she made her maiden journey across the Atlantic. And they stood and watched as these rockets were sent up. As far as I know, now that there's a certain type, I think is it a red flare that is sent up by a ship in distress. Again, that was something that came out of the inquiries into the sinking of the Titanic. So that never again would somebody who was from a shipping background even would stand on the deck of a boat or the bridge of a boat and watch rockets or flares going up from another boat and not be able to interpret them as somebody in distress seeking help. And as far as I understand, that now a red flare is a sign of distress. Come and help us. But deliverance was so near for the Titanic and its passengers. Again, is there not an obvious application in the gospel? How near is deliverance for a sinner? Those that hear, those that are exhorted to come to Christ, and yet many of them shun.
that deliverance. Christ will save.
And they cannot say they've never heard. They cannot say no one's ever told them that they need to be saved. There's certainly many in the world, and that's true with regards to them. But how many, even in Northern Ireland, how many people in Northern Ireland will not be able to say, nobody ever told me. Nobody ever witnessed to me. No one ever warned me I needed to come to Christ. Colonel Archibald Gracie, mentioned him last time. He was one of the survivors, 710 survivors of the Titanic. He wrote a book. He died 8 months afterwards from his injuries that he received in the sinking, but in between that time he wrote a book on the truth about the Titanic. And in that book he tells that as they were loading the lifeboats, that he went down into the cabin area, the first class cabin area, because he was a first class passenger, and he went from cabin to cabin looking for blankets that could be loaded onto the lifeboats with the women and the children to give them some heat and warmth. And it tells us that he went from room to room and he found nobody. He found nobody in any of the rooms, at least any of the first class rooms, until he got to the smoking room. And there in the smoking room, and he records it himself, he says, there in the smoking room, there were four men sitting around the table smoking. Now by that time, Titanic has hit the iceberg. There's this rip in the side, and everybody realizes the ship is going to sink and she's not going to survive. They're loading the people onto the lifeboats. The men, the women and the children are being loaded on first. And here's a man, and he's busying himself looking for blankets, and he enters into the smoking room and he finds these four men. Now he tells in his book that three of them were known to him by name. The other, the fourth man, was a complete stranger. But three of them were known to him by name. He had met during the days of that voyage, had spoken to them, had conversed with them. And this is what he had to say. This is what Colonel Gracie had to say. He records his surprise. He says, it occurred to me at the time that these men desired to show their entire indifference to the danger, and that if I advised them as to how seriously I regarded it, they would laugh at me. That's his own words about the impression that he got from those four men sitting round a table smoking, and the Titanic is sinking. And he goes on to say, that was the last I ever saw of any of them. How many a sinner sits with the same spirit? Danger all around. Death all around. Eternity all around. Just a step between them and death, to use the words of David in the scriptures. And yet they will not seek the Saviour and flee to the place of refuge. Missed opportunity. And how many there will be in hell. And that's what will ring out in their ears and in their minds throughout all of eternity, is missed opportunity. Missed opportunity. Let that not be true of us tonight. Another spiritual lesson that I want you to consider is Titanic's unpreparedness for difficulties. Titanic, for all the greatness and the splendor of that ship, was ill prepared and badly equipped for emergency of that nature. Faulty materials. Approximately 3 million rivets were used in the building of the Titanic. It's said that a 4-man team could complete 200 of those per day in good weather conditions. 3 million of them? 200 a day and a 4-man team if the weather was good. Now some of those rivets were recovered from the wreck after she was discovered in 1985, and when they were analysed and tested, it was discovered that their composition made them more brittle than normal at low temperature. The iron that they were made from was not as pure as it could have been. And the reason why the iron was not as pure was the simple fact of the high demand for building materials for ships at that particular time. I said last Lord's Day it was a great time for shipping, particularly transatlantic shipping. As we pointed out, and as you know, there was the building of the Titanic and there was the building of the Olympic in the Harland and Wolff shipyard. But there were other shipyards in Britain as well, and they were building just as much, just as quickly. And there was this great demand at that particular time for iron. And the composition was just not as pure as it ought to have been. And they didn't realize. It wasn't something that was done deliberately. They didn't realize that because it wasn't as pure as it could have been, at very low temperature, it was exceedingly brittle. In fact, somebody worked out, I was reading this yesterday, somebody worked out that there could only be a movement of 5 millimeters in the plate for it to shear the rivet. That's all it took. Just a movement of 5 millimeters. And what is 5 millimeters in a vast vessel like that? It's absolutely minuscule. And yet, that's what they said. It only took a movement of 5 millimeters in any one plate, and the rivet would shear. And the side, the hull of the ship would start to open. Ill prepared. She didn't know what was going to happen. It says as well that the crew had not been trained adequately in carrying out an evacuation. The ship's officers did not know how many they could safely put into the lifeboats and lower down the side of the ship. Captain Smith had cancelled the scheduled boat drill that very morning of the collision. Didn't think it would ever be needed. Didn't think that she'd ever collide and that she'd ever begin to sink. Never thought that they would leave the lifeboats. We don't need to go through the lifeboat drill. Little did he know before that night would be out, they would need every lifeboat, and they wouldn't know how many they could put in a lifeboat to lower down the side of the ship. Subsequently, when many of the lifeboats were launched, they were less than half full. Imagine that. Not even enough lifeboats on the boat, on the ship to start with, but then when they started to lower them, they lowered them, some of them, less than half full. The first lifeboat that was launched had a capacity for 65 people in it. There was 28 individuals in it. 28 individuals in a lifeboat that could hold 65 when there was only 20 lifeboats and they needed 64 to cover all the passengers. Ill prepared. The third class passengers were largely left to fend for themselves, causing many of them to become trapped below decks as the ship filled with water and they drowned one by one. The protocol, women and children first, was generally followed, it says. For the loading off the lifeboats, and most of the male passengers and crews were left on board. And that book that I've been reading about it goes down through each of the lifeboats, and at the top of it, quite a number, it says no male passengers. No male passengers. And yet there was room on the boat, or room on the lifeboat. In some cases, only half full. But they had never had a drill to know how many people they could put in the lifeboat and lower them down the side of the ship. In fact, it's said as well that when they did lower them, some of them down, the winches that were lowering them down stopped 5 feet above the water. They didn't even go right down to the water. And there they were, suspended down the side of the ship, 5 feet off the ground. And some of the crew that were put into the lifeboats to row them, wives said goodbye to husbands, children said goodbye to fathers, and they got in them, and they put a number of crew in them to row them, to get them away from the boat, because they were afraid of the suction of the boat when she would sink, that they would take everything down to the bottom of the ocean. And it says some of those crew had to decide to cut the ropes and let her fall the last 5 feet into the water. And one of the lifeboats sprung a leak as a result of hitting the water, because she dropped that 5 feet and the number of people that were in it. There was room in the lifeboats, it says, for 500 more people. 500 more people could have got into the lifeboats. If they had just been prepared, if they had done a drill, if they knew how many could have been in it. In fact, there was one boat that they actually did fill. When it became obvious that they didn't have enough lifeboats for all the people, and it was getting desperate, they did put as many in it as possible, and they let it down. And it was almost full. It could have worked. But they didn't know it would work. They weren't sure. Ill prepared. Are we ill prepared for eternity? Are we ill prepared for death? But the Titanic teaches a lesson in that. We've made no preparation. We haven't made sufficient preparation for death. We're not ready. I'm sure most of you are aware of the story about Bruce Ismay, chairman and MD of White Star Line. and how he jumped into one of the boats, one of the lifeboats as it was being lowered, to save his own skin. He subsequently lived a life of ridicule and mockery for saving himself from his own ship when 1,500 people died on the boat that he owned. It was only a few years afterwards that he resigned his position in the company, and he went and lived a very secluded life because of the ridicule that he brought upon himself, trying to save his own skin. Only 13 of the people that jumped into the freezing waters, who were helped into the lifeboat, survived. And yet the lifeboat had room for more than 500. How utterly tragic. How utterly tragic. Oh, may we not lose out because of lack of preparation. Ill prepared. And yet many are today, tonight, ill prepared for death. How many in Northern Ireland are going to go out into God's eternity tonight and they're ill prepared. Ill prepared. Let it not be said of us that we were ill prepared for eternity. There's preparation that needs to be made. Let's make the preparation. Be right with God and ready for heaven. Something else I would want you to consider in these things is God's mercy amidst the tragedy of the Titanic. We have been looking at the dark side of these things and drawing spiritual lessons from them. Let's turn it around a little bit. Let's think of some of God's mercies in the midst of all that tragedy. And you might think, well, where were the mercies in all of this? Well, I think I can point out a few to you that are indications of God's mercies. Nevertheless, even in the midst of such a tragedy, 1,514 people losing their lives. The first thing I would draw your attention to with regards to God's mercies was the low number of passengers on board. Titanic's passenger and crew capacity was 3,339 people in total, crew and passengers all together. And usually, on a high prestige vessel like the Titanic, on its maiden voyage, it could expect it to have been full. All 3,339 places occupied. However, because of circumstances, and we'll come to those in a minute, because of circumstances, she was only two-thirds her capacity. There was 2,208 registered passengers. Now, there were some stowaways that are mentioned on it, but there was 2,208 registered passengers on the Titanic. One-third less than her full capacity. Was that not a mercy? With the lack of lifeboats, the lack of preparedness and getting people into the lifeboats and getting them down onto the ocean to safety, was it not a mercy? How did that come about? Why was there only two-thirds of capacity used? There was a national coal strike in the United Kingdom that very week. When the Titanic was set to sail from Southampton, there was a national coal strike. And that caused considerable disruption to shipping schedules during the whole spring of 1912. And it resulted in a number of crossings of the Atlantic having to be cancelled altogether because there wasn't the coal to provide the steam on the ships. Many would-be passengers, it says, chose to postpone their travel plans until the strike was over, until they could be sure that when they booked their trip that it would actually leave. And as a result, wasn't the only thing, but it had the major result of impacting upon the number of people that was on the Titanic. Was that not a mercy from God? And is it not true, in the worst of circumstances, there's mercies from God? Is it not true about life in general? That in the circumstances of life, trying circumstances, troubling circumstances in life, there's mercies from God? Can the unconverted not have to confess that God is merciful to them? The very fact that they're in the land of the living and continue in the land of the living is a mercy from God. But God hasn't taken them out into eternity already and plunged them into hell already. Is that not a mercy from God? What about the passengers that got off at Cherbourg and at Queenstown? 24 passengers disembarked at Cherbourg to the tenders that came out to her. We mentioned the fact that Titanic was so big she couldn't dock at Cherbourg or at Queenstown. So they came out in tenders. 24 people got off the boat at Cherbourg. 24 fortunate individuals that God had mercy upon. 7 people got off at Queenstown, including a Jesuit trainee. And there's some individuals who argue that the Jesuits sunk the Titanic. I wonder how they got the iceberg in the middle of the Atlantic. But some of them believe that the Jesuits sunk the Titanic, because this Jesuit trainee priest got off. Francis Brown was his name. He got off at Queenstown. And they said, oh, there you have it. The Jesuits sunk the Titanic. I don't think so. There was one unofficial departure, which even more illustrates God's mercies. A man by the name of John Coffey. He was a native of Queenstown. And he had been on the ship for some time. I don't know where he actually got on, whether it was in Belfast, Southampton, hardly it was Cherbourg, but wherever he got on, he decided, I'm getting off. As I say, he lived in Queenstown, or he was a native of Queenstown, and he hid among mailbags that were being transferred over to the tender to be taken to shore, and he escaped going across the Atlantic. Men who knew God's mercies. I'm sure you're familiar as well with the story of John Harper. John Harper was a Baptist minister, originally from Scotland, but had been pastoring a church in London. And that summer, that spring, he was going to America. He was going to Moody Bible Church. He was going to preach for a time at that famous church. It took its name from D.L. Moody. John Harper was on that boat. And it says that the cry that John Harper made when it was known that she had hit the iceberg and they were loading the lifeboats and that she wasn't going to survive, John Harper cried out, let the women, children and the unsaved into the lifeboats. That's what he cried. Let the women, children and the unsaved into the lifeboats. John Harper was a widower. He was taking his only child with him to America. And he took that little girl and he set her into the lifeboat. He could have got into the lifeboat himself. Because he was her only surviving relative, he could have got into the lifeboat if he wanted. With the protocol of women and children, because the child had no other parent with her on the boat, John Harper could have got into the lifeboat. He could have saved himself. But John Harper put his daughter into the lifeboat and he turned round and he started seeking the salvation of the souls that were on the Titanic. And even when he stayed on the deck of the boat as she went down and he survived in the water, didn't get sucked down with the ship as she went to the bottom of the ocean, and the story is told that how he had already given up his life jacket on deck and he swam from person to person in the water, pleading with them to get right with God and get saved. It was reckoned in the water, the water temperature was -4 degrees. They reckoned that you would survive either 15 to 45 minutes in the water. And if you weren't taken out of the water before that period of time, you would die, and many did. Even when the lifeboats came back for the people after the Titanic had sunk and they tried to find people to get them into the lifeboat, many of them had already perished in the freezing water. But the story is told of John Harper swimming from person to person, pleading with them to get saved and to get right with God. 4 years after the sinking of the Titanic, a Scotchman got up in a meeting in Hamilton in Canada, not all that far from Toronto. And this is what he said in the meeting. He says, I am a survivor of the Titanic. When I was drifting alone on a spar that awful night, the tide brought Mr. John Harper of Glasgow also on a piece of wood near me. Man, he said, are you saved? No, I said, I am not. He replied, believe on the Lord Jesus Christ, and thou shalt be saved. And this man went on to say, the waves bore him away. But strange to say, they brought him back a little later, and he said, "Are you saved now?" "No," I said. "I cannot honestly say that I am." He said again, "Believe on the Lord Jesus Christ and thou shalt be saved." And shortly after he went down. And there, alone in the night, and with 2 miles of water under me, I believed. I am John Harper's last convert. Mercies from God. Most certainly, mercies from God. How merciful the Lord was to that one man, that even in the waters he would bring him into contact, not once, but twice. He would bring him into contact with a man who would plead with him to get saved and tell him how to get saved. Oh, God's mercies are plentiful, but they're meant to bring us to repentance. We're told in Romans. They're meant to bring us to repentance. One final thing, our time is running on, and with this I conclude. The cry of men clinging to life. Archibald Gracie tells the story of what happened to those that were still on board when the Titanic finally went down into the waters. He was on board. A number survived the sinking, which in itself is remarkable. For the normal expectation would be that everybody on board and anybody even around in the waters would be sucked down into the depths as the ship would go down and create such a vacuum. But there were a number of people who survived. Archibald Gracie was one of them. He was a very strong swimmer. He actually had planned to take a swim the next morning in Titanic swimming pool. He loved swimming and he was a very powerful swimmer. And he says, "I don't know whether that was what preserved me, but having been sucked down," and he certainly went down and underneath the water, "but he was able to swim up to the surface just in time to get a gasp of air. But when he got to the surface and he looked around and he saw an upturned boat, it was the last of the lifeboats and it hadn't had time to be launched because it got entangled in ropes and wires. And over a period of time, 35 men clambered on to that upturned lifeboat, trying to survive. Remember, 15 to 45 minutes in the water and you were dead, because the waters were so cold. And these men were clambering on to this boat. Archibald Gracie tells the story himself that it got to the stage where they could take no more, and he put his head down. He didn't want to turn anybody away, but he couldn't look them in the face and tell them there's no room in the boat. But they knew, if anybody else gets on this upturned boat, we're all going down. We're all going down. They were all members of the crew, except for Colonel Gracie. And as these men clung on for dear life, he tells that he could hear the pitiful cries of others in the water as they struggled to survive the freezing temperatures. Eva Harkin, we quoted her last time. She was a survivor of the Titanic. This is what she said. She was one of the people in the lifeboat. She says, "The sounds of people drowning are something that I cannot describe to you, and neither can anyone else. It is the most dreadful sound, and there is a terrible silence that follows it, as one by one by one they succumb to the cold and they die. But all this time there's 35 men on an upturned boat." One of the crewmen makes a suggestion. We need to pray. We need to pray. Like the mariners on the boat with Jonah, faced with death, men suddenly believe in God. Do you see that? Faced with death, men suddenly begin to believe in God. Because there is in man's nature this innate knowledge of God. He is born. It's called the seed of religion, is the theological term. There is inbuilt, ingrained in us, created in us, the knowledge of God. And when men are faced with death, that comes out. And Colonel Gracie says these were hardened sailors. But as they're struggling to survive on this upturned boat, and they know there's nobody around us, there's nobody coming to help us, and we're in danger of going down into the depths of the ocean, one of them says, "We need to pray." It was suggested that in unison they would pray the Lord's Prayer. They would pray the Lord's Prayer. And they did. They did. But that's not enough to save a soul. Some of them died. Some of them didn't survive on that upturned boat as the night went on. But there's one thing for sure, you need to know more of the gospel than that. When you're facing death and you don't know Christ, and you begin to realize God is real and eternity is real and heaven is real and hell is real, you need to know more than just the Lord's Prayer. You need to pray more than the Lord's Prayer. You need to be able to pray the prayer of the publican prayed. God be merciful to me, a sinner. And if you can't pray that prayer and you haven't prayed that prayer, you'll not survive the judgment day. It'll be too little too late. But men believe in God when faced with death. I found that remarkable in reading that man's story. And he goes on to say, nobody said, no, we don't believe in God. Nobody said that. Not one of those 35 men, hardened sailors, crew members on that upturned boat, not one of them spoke out and said, no, I don't believe in God. In unison they prayed the Lord's Prayer. Men clinging for life suddenly realize there's a God. But praying the Lord's Prayer is not enough. It's not enough. It needs to be the sinner's prayer. And I trust every one of us will have prayed the sinner's prayer and sought God for mercy. If you haven't, may God bring you to that place even tonight. God be merciful to me, a sinner. Let's bow in prayer.